Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Bedrosian throws to Sandberg, and the pitch is grounded to second base. Thompson has it. Throws to first. It's over. 27 years of waiting have come to an end. The Giants have won the pennant.
Welcome back to Thompson to Clark, our Giants podcast, and we're going to talk about a bunch of different things this week, including, well, I know the Tigers are good, but I'm still really mad that they got swept in Detroit.
Yeah, should have at least taken one of those games, man.
Yeah, so that kind of put a little bit of a damper, including the lack of run scoring by this baseball team. Yeah. We'll talk about all that stuff, but also we're going to talk about some of the news. There was a roster move today that I think we've been expecting. And Grant Brisby from The Athletic wrote about his quarter century Giants team for the 2000s. And we'll go through that. I actually have two disagreements with him on the players that he chose for that team, but it's a fun little gimmick. Like the first, I think Jason Stark did the entire major leagues for the first 24 years or whatever or the first 25 years of the 2000s. And then every beat writer that they have for each market has been putting together their singular team, and so Grant did his last week, and it was a lot of fun to go back and revisit. And I was like, really, is this what we're doing? And then I go back in the stats and I'm like, yep, he did his homework, he was right on that one.
Yeah, I had one disagreement. I don't remember if I think on the bench. Yeah, I mean, there's so many other players you can throw in on the bench, but still. Yeah,
I'll tease the one that I had, and it is Baby Yaz. That's the one I disagreed with the most. But it's arguable. It's not like Grant flat out missed it. He made a choice on a player based on longevity and consistency over like a really good like 2 years, which is kind of what I was looking at.
But yeah, anyway. And defense too. Threw in a little defense. Yeah,
absolutely. As well. All right. So we'll get to that in a second because I think it's going to be fun to go through that entire list. First and foremost, let's talk about the latest news, which is Encarnacion is up. And thank you, Luis Matos, for getting our only big hit of the week, and we are sending you back to AAA, my friend. Luis Matos goes down. So this one will be an interesting one because they're not moving away from being as right-handed heavy. You know, it's so weird. They're so right-handed heavy, yet they can't hit left-handed pitching. Like, I don't understand that one at all.
Yeah.
But they now have an influx of non-fielders, essentially, like Lamont Wade, Wilmer Flores, and Encarnacion. It's like three DHs, essentially. Mm-hmm. Lamont Wade can play first base halfway decently, but the other two guys are really not there for anything other than their ability to swing the bat. And so I'm interested to see how they manage that, because that was like last year's team was just like no athleticism. And I'm not saying Encarnacion isn't athletic, but he's not someone that you're going to be able to plug into a position that'll save you late. These are three guys that if you had defensive replacements, you'd take them out in the ninth inning. And so that's going to be interesting how Melvin plays that. I guess that you go with the hot hand, whoever's hitting hits. How much of a chance, how much time do you take away from the other two guys to get Encarnacion as many ABs as possible to get him going? Like, there's lots of questions to ask, and you're doing so in a really big series in June, as big of a series as you can have in June with the Padres in town for four games. This is kind of, you know, what I like about the long baseball season is every big series feels a little bit like a litmus test. You're like, okay,
yeah,
how good really are we? And then the Tigers series felt similarly. I was like, okay, they can pitch with anyone, but they can't hit for jack against these good teams. And so now we have another really good team. The Padres don't score a lot of runs. They don't give up a lot of runs. They're very similar to the Giants in that way. And they're going to compete. They're one game ahead of the Giants in the standings. They're two games behind the Dodgers in the standings. So this should be a very competitive series. But I'm also a little worried where the Padres are going to come in and I'm going to be like, okay, the Giants just aren't as good as we hoped that they were.
Well, the Padres did us in that short little two-game series out in San Diego. But yeah, I know what you mean. And it is a huge test. I mean, this is to say, look, I mean, this is the team you're hanging around with in second place right now. They weren't able to separate themselves from the Padres during this stretch. And it's kind of tough. I mean, I was looking at numbers today because I started thinking about, like, I just want to look at, like, the last three, you know, road trips, home stands. And if you go back to May 5th, the Giants since then have had three home stand road trips. So two of them are road trips. One of them's a home stand. They went 11-13 total in those three trip stands. And they had a run differential of +7. if one game in there where they beat the A's 9-1, and you look at another game where they beat the Cubs in extras 14-5, those are two big run differentials. But to come out of that at only +7 and two games under .500 during that stretch, it's pretty tough. And during that stretch, the Giants had the number one team ERA,
mm-hmm.
number two team FIP in all of the majors. And then let's look at the hitting. Then they were 24th during that team average, 26th in runs scored, and then 24th in team WRC plus. So they just weren't creating runs. They weren't getting on base. They weren't doing the things that they should. When you look at 11-13 during that stretch and you look at the pitching, if they had any kind of hitting, the Giants could have come out of that stretch with, like, I don't know, 20 wins, 21 yeah. wins possibly. So it's kind of frustrating to watch right now. And with Encarnacion coming on, so I watched Bob Melvin's, I guess I posted a little bit, NBC Sports Bay Area, a little bit of Bob Melvin's scrum today, his media scrum. And he did say that Encarnacion will be playing corner outfields. So he's going to be playing left field, right field, DH, first base.
Let's actually make sense of what you just said.
Sure.
So he'll play right field when mm-hmm. they face left-handed pitching. Or he'll be giving some opportunity because you're not taking Ramos out of the lineup. Ramos is the only guy who's actually hitting. Chapman had a pretty decent week, but
when Ramos is a DH, we had games where Ramos was DH and Matos was playing left field. Mm-hmm. Jung-Hoo Lee was out, and you'd put Matos in center field. So now the question is, when Jung-Hoo Lee has a rest day, who's playing center field? That's kind of the question right now.
Well, that could be Yaz, and then you do move.
It could be Yaz.
On to right.
And you're going to enjoy this. This is something else he said during the scrum. He said that somebody said, do you have any infielders who might be able to pop out to the outfield now that you know, can kind of mix things up a little bit? Uh-oh. And your favorite, Chris Cross, has been taking fly balls every day. And he said that he can play outfield. So there's, there's a little nugget from that media scrum. I was like, oh, wow. So we might see a crisscross outfield. I don't want to see him in right. I don't want to see him in center. I guess I'm okay seeing him in left field, but yeah.
So what it means also is Fitzy has graduated to not having to play the outfield. They're sticking him at second. You can keep playing second. Your utility-ness is lesser. You are now a starter. So,
and Wade Meckler's back. He's getting that bats in Triple A now. So he's back. So that's good. So that's another outfield. But yeah, he pretty much said, Bob Melvin said he wanted to send Matos down because Matos came to him and said, I need more at-bats. And he's like, well, I can't get you the at-bats here, you know, at this level. If he did say, though, if Encarnacion didn't come back, Matos was going to be seeing some more at-bats. So I wonder if, you know, we're leaning more towards a Yaz platoon. You know, they gave Yaz a good couple of months to face left-handers, and it doesn't pan out as well. It started out, you know, okay, the beginning of the season. He was getting some good at-bats against left-handers, but now it's just not happening. So I think Melvin was really excited about the roster flexibility that he's getting with Encarnacion coming. And that was my thing. I saw somebody on Blue Sky had posted, you know, I think we talked about this last week. They said, as soon as Encarnacion comes back, goodbye, Lamont Wade Jr. I said, no, it's going to be Matos because you've got a guy who could play outfield and first base and Encarnacion. You're not going to dump Lamont Wade Jr. when you've got a guy who's not getting at bats in Matos and also can be sent down to the minors, come back up later in the season.
Yeah. And so then you get even more right-handed if you dump Wade, not that Wade's right. doing anything, but just the opportunity exactly. to have him come in and pinch hit and draw a walk or something.
Yeah. And the other thing that Melvin did mention as well, he did kind of allude to the fact that, hey, Lamont Wade Jr. has, you know, he hasn't put it together yet. He'll have some stretches where he'll have some good at bats, but it's not compiling, and results aren't happening. So he did kind of hint at the fact that you are going to see Encarnacion face left-handers or face right-handers. Mm-hmm. So that would put Lamont Wade Jr. on the bench, and maybe you just don't see Lamont Wade Jr. as much, and he's your late inning pinch hitter to come in and face a righty. So we might see more of that, you know, a good off the bench type of left-handed bat, which the Giants don't have a lot of right now. So,
by the way, I don't know if people can see on the video. I wanted to show, it looks
like, oh, there you go.
Pride month. Happy Pride month.
Sweet. I forgot to wear my Pride shirt. It's a Pride month. I'll wear it next week.
You can wear it next week.
Nevada shirt.
Yeah, I bought this last year or the year before. Someone just one of the baseball accounts we follow on social media just threw it up there, and I was like, I'm just gonna buy it. This is cool. So
yeah, it's awesome.
Rocking it today. So I wanted to share a tweet that kind of summarized a little bit of what you were talking about in our intro. Shana Rubin said the Giants finished May with a 13-14 record. Their 2.64 May ERA is San Francisco's lowest for a single month since September-October 2010, which was the year they won the World Series.
That's a minuscule ERA, too, for late in the year.
Yeah, and last time something like this happened in San Francisco was 1985. And that's the year that they lost 100 games. Yeah. With a 2.53 ERA and 7-12 record. So the team is being carried by not only the starting pitching, but the bullpen, which I think we can call the best bullpen in baseball right now. They have the lowest ERA out of all bullpens by like more than a half a run, I think.
Yeah.
And that's with having Birdsong and Harrison in the bullpen and then shoving them in the rotation. So you had starters in the bullpen not really being bullpen guys who were helping out the bullpen as well. So shout out to the pitching, because without this pitching, like, just imagine if the pitching was average, the Giants would be clearly under 500 baseball team.
Oh, absolutely. This team would not even be knocking on the door to second place of the National League West. They wouldn't be knocking on the door to a wild card spot. We'd be talking about who are we going to trade? Are we going to trade, Robbie Ray? What are we going to do at this point? Bring up some of the young guys. But again, when you look in AAA, who are you going to bring up? I mean, really, we're waiting for Bryce Eldridge. That's what we're waiting for. And he's in AA. Nobody in AAA right now. I mean, they started putting, I can't think of his name right now. totally escaped. But either way, there's nobody in AAA that's ready to knock down the door. Luciano is at first base. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, they moved started putting him to first to give him opportunities there.
Exactly. And that's another right-handed bat playing first base. And I don't think the Giants need that right now. They've got a couple already. They got one guy who's top five in RBIs in the major leagues and Wilmer, Flores. So I don't think you need another right-handed first baseman, but they're just trying to find him a position at this point. And maybe it's the showcase, and maybe Matos is going back down to AAA to showcase, because you can move a couple of those guys for a proven major league bat if you can get those guys at bats in the minors to say, hey, look what we have.
You know what I was thinking about when they said Luciano was taking ground balls at first base? I was like, oh, I guess the outfield thing didn't work out too well.
That's pretty much it. Shortstop didn't work out. Second base didn't work out. Outfield didn't work out. You got first base. And we talked about this in the offseason and late last year. This guy does not have a position. And I'm sure that's weighing on him when he goes to the plate, too. That's got to be tough. When you don't have a position that you excel at, you can't help the team in the field, and you're coming up and you're saying, well, now my value is at the plate. And then you don't have that either. I mean, he's not terrible right now. Pull up his numbers. I always bookmark some of these guys because I'd love to go back and just like once a week and look. I mean, his OPS is 729 and 9 home runs, .212 batting average. That's not something to look at and go, all right, this guy's major league ready. Let's bring him on up. So it's kind of tough right now.
But you did mention a guy that's interesting though. And the reason why he's interesting is because the Giants already started his clock by bringing him up 2 years ago, and that's Wade Mechler. Mechler is a left-handed hitter. He does play the outfield. And if you did want to see, the problem is, though, is you're essentially bringing him up as a utility outfielder. You're not bringing him up because you want to get him at bats. He's not going to get at bats in front of Jung-Hoo Lee. They could mess with the DH, and if Jung-Hoo Lee needs to DH, then you put Mechler out in center field. You could do those things, but it's not like he's coming up to be a savior. He would come up to give them more flexibility with their outfielders. So that's an interesting one, but I think it only becomes a thing if, for instance, you do let go of Lamont Wade because he's now the third guy in that rotation at first base, and both of your first basemen are right-handed dominant. So you need another left-handed hitter. It's somewhere just for opportunities. And Mechler's fast. You know, we were talking about this, how they were earlier in the season, they were pretty aggressive on the base running. And then now it's just the absolute stop sign. Not like they're getting on base at all anyways. And I'm sure that some of it is like, if you're not getting on base a lot, you don't want to risk getting thrown out at second because you know that may be the only guy you get on base for the first, for the next three or four innings.
They did steal four bases yesterday.
They
scored four runs. So, I mean, there's something to it to get motion on the base paths. But again, you got to pick the right catcher to pick on. That's the thing, too. You can't go out there and just say, hey, I'm just going to run all over JT Realmuto. Well, not really. I mean, you're probably not going to. Just like teams have to be, choosy when Patrick Bailey's behind the plate. You've got to decide, am I going to run on this guy? So it's a guy like Mechler. I'd love to see him come up. But again, like you said, the clock has started. He's on the 40 man. These guys are on the 40 man. So what do you do now with him? This is that regime change where you go from from Farhan to Buster. And now you got to decide, like, well, Farhan started the clock on these guys. Mm-hmm. They're on the 40 man, but we don't have a spot for them right now. So that's the hard part. But again, next year, you're most likely not going to have Lamont Wade Jr. Most likely not going to have Yaz. Those are two guys you probably won't have unless the Giants re-sign Yaz to a 1 or 2 year deal, which they could, because they value his defense. They value his clubhouse presence. And you know, he's kind of a quick guy on the base paths, and he's a smart guy on the base paths. So, you know, it's going to be kind of tricky next season. But that's the whole thing too, is that Buster also said, I want to give these guys time in the minors. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see these guys, you know, like Eldridge right now, he's hitting 280. He's got what, 7 home runs. His OPS is in the upper 800s, right? 862. Mm-hmm. So, but he's not jumping to AAA because he's still, you kind of want to see the guy dominate AA and start to dominate the first base position as well before you pump him up to AAA.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up, but not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone, all with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number. Not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
Yeah, I think what they want, what they will also want to see in AA is that he has a consistency in his at bats, and he's if he's hitting 280, let's see if he's hitting 280 for 300 ABs versus just, you know, 75 ABs.
Exactly.
Because that is the evolution, or that is the that is how you want him to progress. Because when he goes into AAA, they're going to get a lot of false positives out of his numbers, just because everyone's numbers get juiced in AAA. So this is really where they're going to make the, I think where they're going to make the determination on how much growth he has shown. Because when he goes to AAA, that's going to be more of a concession of like, okay, now we just need to get him the at-bats, the consistent at-bats. We need to see how he prepares, knowing that he's just on the cusp of being ready, because he's still so young at the same time. So that's a nice, interesting juggle piece. And I think we talked about this before, but Buster Posey, the guy who's going to make that call, was in a similar position himself as a young player. We knew by the end of the season prior, so this would have been 2009, he gets called up in September, which doesn't count against his clock. And they wait until my birthday in 2010. Because I remember I was in Vegas in 2010 on my birthday, just got off the plane and got the notification that Buster Posey was coming up. And I was like, finally, this dude should have been up all year. Right. But they wanted to delay that clock, because then his contract or his free agency clock was starting. So
Well, little did we know he wasn't going anywhere. He was staying with us the whole time.
So. Yeah, the whole time. and he's been in that situation with Bryce. So who better to understand, you know, what positively or negatively? Maybe he's like, hey, you know, Buster was a little bit older in that he did go to college. So he, you know, he's probably 2 or 3 years older than Bryce at that point.
Right.
But, you know, he understands that whole system of like, okay, you know, what was I ready or was I not? Or by the time I got there, you know, how weird was it? And do we want to put that pressure on this kid unless we believe we have a championship club? Because when Buster came up in 2010, the Giants were not of the belief that they were a World Series team. I don't even think we really thought that until October, like when they're fighting back to get, you know, to finally take over in the division. Like that's when we were like, okay, like we know they're good, but how good are they? And so that's the other thing is, do you want to bring him into these like moments where they, if they're an 85 win team, they're going to be playing some important games in the fall in you know, August or in September. So lots of things that, and that's one, you know, that's one thing about having a weekly podcast is we can follow that and we can follow the trajectory and you can, it's kind of funny because you talked about the Melvin thing and these guys speak in very specific ways because they don't want to give out information.
Right.
Well, I mean, they want to give out information, but they don't want to give out too much information to where they show their cards because you want your cards, you know, you want to hold them close to the vest and you don't want other teams like, you know, checking in on the things that you're saying. So I find, you know, what Bob said, I thought was very interesting about, you know, costs and Lamont Wade. It kind of tells you a little bit about what he's thinking about, because I guarantee you most Giants fans are like, we don't need Lamont Wade on this team. But Bob Melvin is like, give me another left-handed bat that I can actually put on this team because we don't have one. He's like literally our only one, you know, who I have on the bench. So just stuff to think about that we as fans don't necessarily think about, and this dude is thinking about this stuff 24/7.
I want to feed the fire a little bit more and read you Bryce Eldridge's career minor league stats real quick. Because, you know, he just hit 181 games. So just a little bit over a regular season. In 181 games, he's got 36 home runs, 130 RBIs, 7 stolen bases, .290 average, and an .887 OPS. So it's almost like a full season, right? So he's in the minors. He's a 30 home run guy, 115 rib guy, 120 rib guy. So I know a lot of Giants fans are clamoring. I can't wait to see this guy get up there and see what he can do with McCovey Cove. It's going to be very exciting. But I think I'm like you. I think we're both on the same page where we've seen too many guys rush to the minors over the last 4 or 5 years that we're like, we can wait. I mean, I want to see him, you know, hitting .340 in AAA and hitting a home run every other game where you're like, okay, there's nothing else to prove.
Yeah.
He's ready. That's kind of what I want to see. So
I'm actually interested in it. And I'm going to share another image here.
Cool.
And we'll see how this displays on the actual podcast here. Oh, there we go.
Oh, yeah.
All right. You had sent me this on Friday, which was Buster was on with Murph and Marcus on the Giants executive show on KMBR. And he had some comments on certain scenarios, and the sports leader, the graphics team, put a – this is an excellent graphic. I'm really
impressed. It's really cool. It made it easy for guys like me to read it and then move on. I don't have to like search the internet and search social media to find all these little things. Just put it in one nice place.
This is awesome. It's great. Great job. Whoever's doing the graphics for KMBR, excellent job. Yeah, yeah. So they called it Buster's Check-In, and he talked about four different scenarios. So first he talked about Willy Adames, and I think a lot of fans are kind of like, we have a little bit more patience with Willy. Because we paid him all this money. We know that it's kind of hard sometimes to change teams. but it is now June. Like that's the patience where we're at. And look, the guy has a minus WAR. He still is not even at zero with his WAR right now. So Willy Adames, Buster says, got to be patient. It's not uncommon when superstars sign a big deal and struggle out of the gate. You're seeing it too with Juan Soto. So be patient. Willy is a dude. Juan Soto is struggling, but he's not struggling this hard. And
he's not struggling anymore. He had a really nice weekend. So he's really not, these aren't the same guys anymore.
On Patrick Bailey, who is not even a replacement level hitter at this point in the season, he said, I feel for him. It's not easy. It's not an easy place to be when you're having to run out there and be a leader on one side of the ball and struggle as much as he has on offense. Patrick Bailey is the catcher of the rest of the season, right? Was the question that was asked of him. And he said, yeah, he's our catcher. I talked about how Buster knows the Bryce Eldridge scenario. What he doesn't know is the Patrick Bailey scenario, because he came in and he kind of hit immediately and never really stopped hitting. Even though, he wasn't the big power hitter that people thought he was going to be, but he never had the same struggles.
Didn't he hit in something like 7 or 8 straight games when he came up?
Yeah, it was
some crazy thing. Yeah,
he sat there and you're like, yeah, this dude should have been here like the whole year. Like, what are we doing? So on the first base situation, this was my favorite one. We need to get more production out of that position, no question. Looking at a timeshare with Encarnacion Flores, Casey Schmidt, and Lamont Wade Jr. And I immediately replied to you and said, this is the shittiest timeshare I've ever seen.
It truly
bad.
Is.
It's a really bad timeshare.
It's not. I mean, these are, save for Wilmer Flores, these are guys who really haven't 100% proven themselves at the major league level. Don't call it the first base situation. Call it the first base placeholders, because we just talked about Eldridge. He's going to be there. This is just the first base patience situation. How patient can you be watching these four guys waiting for Bryce Eldridge to come along? And again, I love Wilmer and I love his at bats, but I don't want to see him playing first base. I want to see him DHing, so.
Hey, look, Encarnacion can come in and he could hit right away. And then maybe it's not so much of a timeshare. But the fact that you have to be in a timeshare with Casey Schmidt, who's a backup third baseman, is like, that's not great. So
he's busted down the door of that situation, and that's a bad situation then.
All right. And this is a good one here. And we'll talk about this guy for a little bit. The closer situation. Buster said, if it's a save situation, it's going to be Doval. We feel like this is going to give us the best chance to succeed. Doval is back.
Yeah.
The all the struggles that he had last year. Now, he's got to do it for more than 2 months. But, man, he looks like a completely different pitcher from last year. Whatever the struggles were, I'd love to hear someone talk to him and ask what's the difference. They took a lot of pressure off of him in the beginning. He's like the seventh inning guy to start the season. Ryan Walker struggles, and then Doval gets some opportunities to close. He's now has 7 saves, and his ERA is under 2. So, fantastic stuff by the guy. His mom got to see him pitch in Miami, which was really cool. We used that. I used that as our thumbnail on the live stream, just him and his mom at the game. So I like it. I still don't like fully trust him yet. Like, there's still like a little worry because I have last year in the back of my mind, but he was an all-star 2 years ago. Remember he had that fantastic at bat against J-Rod? Like, he's like, okay, I'm bringing 100 and you're swinging as hard as you can. Let's see who wins this one. And he struck him out. Like, that was awesome. So I'm very hopeful that he doesn't kind of fall into some of those bad habits as last year, but you got to shout him out because he battled through a lot of stuff last year, so much so that they sent him to AAA almost as a way to probably just check his ego a little bit. And then he fought back. He was not deemed the starter at the beginning of the year, or the closer at the beginning of the year. And now he is because of how well he's pitched. So shout out to Camilo. It was really, really nice to see because he's still so young and he came up with the Giants. We got to see him the whole time and I root for him. But yeah, I want to see the consistency stay because I remember last year very, very vividly and I don't want to see that happen again.
Well, and they threw him right in the fire. They named him the closer, and then they're like, here's a four-out save. Here's 2 days later, here's another four-out save. And these aren't traditional saves. I mean, we're not talking, you know, like a get in there, get three outs in the ninth, you're up by two runs, and you're facing the bottom of the order. I mean, these are four-out saves, and he got through them. Yeah, I think he had a couple hiccups. He had a couple of walks. But then to see him get through that, and past those walks is really nice to see because we didn't see that a whole lot, you know, last season.
Dennis Eckersley is like, what? I don't pitch.
Yeah, he's like,
anything, guys, I only pitch the ninth inning with no runners on.
Yeah. And then I scream at Dwight Evans after Frank him out. You know, that's bad. So, well, I'm happy to see. And the thing, too, is you texted me. I don't remember what day this was, but you texted me and said, hey, Camilo's the closer again. I gave you like an hour. I didn't say anything. I gave you an hour to go grab because he was still on the free agent list.
Oh, I didn't even think about it.
And I was like, okay, I'm going to give him an hour because he's the one who told me. So I let an hour go by and then I went and grabbed him. I desperately need closers. So
it would have been good because Mason Miller is destroying my baseball team. So,
oh my God. Yeah. That's a tough one to watch too because that guy is like, dynamite lights out when he needs to be, but he's not doing it this year. But yeah, to have Camilo back, it's nice. Ryan Walker, I think, pitched the seventh yesterday. And then what are we going to do with Jordan Hicks?
Yeah, my goodness.
That's the problem. That was the, fall from grace. You talk about first half last season, we thought we have a new starter going the next 3 or 4 years. And since then it's just been, you know, struggle to find. I think it's a command thing too, because when he throws his slider and he throws his sinker, I don't think he knows where it's going. And that's kind of an issue right now. But yeah, I mean, the Giants, they have Tristan Beck up. So Beck is kind of your long relief guy. I'd rather see Jordan Hicks as my mop up long relief guy. If you're down by 4 or 5 runs, in the fifth or sixth inning, I'm fine seeing Jordan Hicks come in. Then I'm not fine seeing him come in when we're up by 2 runs in the seventh or eighth inning. That makes me really nervous right now. So that's one part of the bullpen that's just kind of a little bit of a messy situation and kind of like see where it goes from here and what do you do about it?
Yeah, it's just the hope is just that the transition from starter to bullpen, like maybe that's it. The worry is like arm fatigue or whatever it is, you know, that plagued him last year. That's what you hope because he's still so young and throws so hard. You don't want to see any of the injuries come up. So we'll see, you know, if they put him, you know, rest him or put him on an IL or something, that may be a sign, but maybe he'll just be able to fight through it. Maybe it's literally just the transition back to the pen that's he's got to deal with. So yeah, good luck to him too, because you hate to see guys with so much talent not be able to put it together, especially when the Giants, what they signed up to, 3 or 4 year deal?
I think it was a 4. I'll look that up, but yeah, I mean, he's such a big part of it and could be such a big part of the bullpen, because of the way, you know, how hard he throws and how deceptive his stuff is. But when you don't know where it's going to go, it just makes things extremely difficult. Let's see. They've got him this year at $12.5 million and the next 2 years at $12.5 million. So yeah, it was a 4-year deal.
All right, let's transition to Grant Brisby's all quarter century team for the Giants. We'll go through the easy pickings for really quickly, and then we'll take some time with some of the ones that we disagree about. But he started the team, and he said, catcher, Benito Santiago. And then he said, just seeing if you're paying attention, because the catcher is Buster Posey, of course, on the all quarter century team.
No debate.
Buster had, for his time on the Giants, he had a 45 war. Benito Santiago was second with a 4.6 war for those 25 years.
Jeez.
Bobby Estelea actually tied for fourth with Patrick Bailey. That's
crazy. Estelea had some good offensive numbers for a couple of years there.
Yeah, he hit some home runs.
Yeah.
And he was a big, giant, buff guy.
Yeah,
by the way, AJ Pierzynski was 19th in war with a 0.3.
You know what? I hate him so much, I'd put him 20th just because.
First base, the belt wars. There's not really any belt wars here because Brandon Belt ran away with this one. Though, you know, JT Snow had a couple of seasons early in the 2000s, but Brandon Belt was there for since 2011 to 2022. So Brandon Belt gets the first baseman's on the all quarter century team. Second base was kind of interesting because Jeff Kent gets it for Grant, and Kent was only on the Giants for 3 years in the 2000s. Wow. Just 2000, 2001, and 2002. Though he won the MVP.
I was going to say, I think those were his three best seasons. So, yeah, just good timing.
So, you know, he was just so good that he just wins over everybody. The second person, so the top three would have been, just based on war, Ray Durham had a 10.5 war to Jeff Kent's 19.5. And Joe Panic had a 7 war. Tyro and Donovan Solano were fourth and fifth. And I was kind of wondering, I was like, what about Scudero and Freddie Sanchez? They were right behind those guys.
Look who's number 10, though.
Christian.
I mean, he's already broken the top 10. That's amazing.
Another easy one. He and Belt were probably the Posey were just, you know, you just write their names down. Brandon Crawford at shortstop. No one came really second. I guess it was Aurelia because Aurelia had a really good season in 01.
Yeah.
But the rest of the guys were Camargo, Cody Ransom, Luis Figueroa, who I don't even remember. That's how good Ecarl was. Yeah. Third base, Pablo Sandoval. So right in that zone of, you know, he comes up in what, 2008, and then in 2009, we're like, oh my gosh, we actually have someone who hits in the middle of the order. But Pablo Sandoval, I think that one's pretty easy too. And it's funny because, as Grant mentions, he started in the Giants system as a catcher, but who was he blocked by? Benji Molina, and then even if there was no Molina, he would have been blocked by Buster Posey. So good job on moving to third base there, Pablo. So he only played 21 games at third base in the minors before he came up to the big leagues. That's crazy.
That's crazy considering how well he played third base.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just an athletic dude.
Yeah, just
a big athletic guy, dude. Very athletic.
Throw with both arms. Just crazy. Barry Bonds, obviously in left field. Grant had a fantastic stat. He said that Pat Burrell and Alex Dickerson both hit 23 home runs as Giants left fielders in the 2000s, which is the second highest total after Bonds, who hit 37 home runs against the Padres alone in the 2000s.
Good Lord.
All right, here's an arguable one. Center field, it's a battle between Angel Pagan and Andres Torres. And I'm very interested in where you lean here with those two.
Okay. I'm an Andres Torres guy.
Okay.
Mainly because of the fact that he was there in 2010. So that's a very special meaning to me as a former center fielder. I'm just a big time Andres Torres guy. Also, nobody dresses like Andres Torres. Also, you got to remember that too. He had the jeans and the cowboy hat. Yeah, the cool look. But I liked him a little bit. I mean, what was the WAR difference on those two guys?
So, if you're looking at it by best singular year, Andre Torres had a 5.3 WAR in 2010. Just a nutty season. The year that they won the first World Series.
Yeah.
So Pagan's best WAR was 2012 when they won the second World Series at 4.2. His next highest WAR after that 4.2 was 1.7 in his last year with the Giants in 2016. Andre Torres's next best WAR was a 1.8 in 2009, which was the year before his crazy season. So I liked both guys. I mean, both guys had their flaws too.
Sure, absolutely.
I think I just rooted a little bit harder for Andres Torres.
Yeah.
I think he was a little bit more likable.
I think that's what it was. Pagan was cool, but he always had that kind of brooding look, and
other thing about Pagan is that I don't think if you watched him every day that you thought he was as good as advertised. But right. Then like that first season, that 2012 season, at the end of the season, you're like, okay, these numbers actually do show that he's a really good player. But he almost always seemed more disappointing than I wanted him to be. And then Torres, you just didn't know who he was. And so he's just kind of like this bolt of lightning. So he kind of overachieved to what you thought or what you were hoping. And Pagan maybe just achieved exactly or maybe even underachieved. So I'm going to lean myself for Andres Torres just because he was more memorable. And also I think he achieved more than what you thought he was going to be.
Would you say, I mean, the other one too, the other name that we don't see in there could have been in third place. Could be Marvin Bernard. 2000. 2001, 2002, 2003, those 3 years combined, 3.1 WAR. So he could have been in there close.
Yeah, I think so. I think Grant actually didn't list the rest of the center fielders out, but you might be right. He might have been third in that list.
Yeah, I think I would still go those two guys over Bernard. But yeah, I lean towards Torres for sure.
All right, so now we go to right field, and this is the hardest one, I think, and it's basically what you want to see in your players, what you value. So he chose Mike Yastrzemski, and Mike Yastrzemski does have the highest WAR of the right fielders in the first 25 years of the 2000s at 15.4. Mm-hmm. The top five goes Yastrzemski, according to Grant, Yastrzemski, Randy Winn, Hunter Pence, Ellis Burks, and Moise Alou. And so I looked up all of the numbers because what I was trying to do is I was just trying to figure out, like, how hard do I really have to kind of cheat the game to make Hunter Pence the right answer here? Because, you know, who doesn't like Hunter Pence? Hunter Pence fell off really hard at the end there. But for two seasons, he was a really, really good baseball player. Now, if you go Ellis Burks only played with the Giants for 280-ish games or so. And in those 280-ish games or so, the dude did hit 60 jacks. So
yeah, right.
that helps. But he had a 5 WAR in the year 2000. You know what's crazy is he leaves the Giants in 2001, and his next two seasons as a 36-year-old in Cleveland and a 37-year-old, 28 and 32 jacks. This dude still had some meat on the bone there that they kind of let go. But he was
one of my favorites for sure.
2000 was not only his best Giants season, it was arguably the second or third best season of his entire career at the age of 35. His best season would have been in Colorado in 96 because he hit 40 jacks, and I think he was in the top three of MVP. But so Els Burks had 2.5 excellent seasons as a power hitting right fielder. So then you go Moise Alou. Moise Alou, he had a in two seasons with the Giants, his 38 and 39 year seasons, by the way. He had a 4.8 war, still hit for high average, didn't really hit for a ton of power. But, you know, I think everyone remembers kind of the faltering in the playoffs of that year, which kind of has the stent or the scent, the bad scent of Moise Alou. But yeah, he only had two seasons. So still a good player, but really in the twilight of his career. He would only play two more seasons, actually like more like one and change with the Mets to end his career. So then we look at Hunter Pence. And this is where I was trying to work some magic here. If you include 2013 and 2014, where they win the World Series, he gets traded. He gets traded at the end of 2012. So he helps them win the World Series. Then his 2013 season is his best year as a Giants player, 27 jacks, 99 ribs. Then 2014 has another really good season, 20 jacks, 74 ribs. He plays in every single game both of those years. And then he just falls off kind of drastically after that. But those 2 years plus the end of 2012 to me are so much more memorable and valuable than the six Yastrzemski seasons that we're talking about. Now, again, I came into this exercise trying to shoehorn him into this thing and to yeah. argue against Grant, but the two titles have to mean something, right? Like they have to be of value there. It's not like he was the MVP of the World Series or anything, but just the fact right. that he was on those two championship winning teams and producing at that time, I think that leans me more to Pence than it does to Baby Yaz.
Yeah, that's the hard part too, because if you look at this and you go with the practice of anybody who was on those World Series teams, especially 10, 12, and 14, anybody who was on all three of those, you got to pretty much put them in there. But you look at Pence and you had the half a season and then a great season, you know, half a season World Series, great season, full season World Series. But then after that, when you start adding up his war with the Giants the rest of the way, he's only, what, 4 war behind Yaz? And Yaz hasn't been on many, you know, hasn't been on any memorable Giants teams other than 21. And he plays a solid right field. Is a lot of Yaz's war from his fielding? Because that's the other thing you have to look at too. Because I'm looking at war on Baseball Reference. But then if you go to FanGraphs, it might be a little bit different because they calculate F war. I don't know. It's a total toss-up, but I'm going to lean towards Pence because of the fact without the Reverend in 2012, without the speeches,
yeah,
you don't win that thing. And that's valuable right there. That's worth 10 war right there. So that puts him above Yaz yeah. in my mind.
Yeah, you're basically taking two really good seasons of Pence and like a really bad season, by the way. That counts. And yeah. Yastrzemski is essentially the same player for the last 6 years.
Right.
And one of those was a truncated season. So his war probably, if he would have played the full 100, you know, the full 162, his war probably would have been in the fours or something. So that would yeah. have elevated him. So you kind of have to look at it like that too. But I'm taking Pence just because I just think you got to take Pence there.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't look away from him. I mean, there's no way.
All right, so he picked Tori Alba, Yorvit, Joaquin Arias, Andres Galarraga, Gregor Blanco, and Austin Slater as his bench. He wanted to make it a real bench. He didn't want to put the leftover star okay. players on his bench. And then we get to the pitching staff. And this is pretty easy, I think. Lincecum, Kane, Bumgarner, Jason Schmidt, Logan Webb. He makes a case for Vogelsong, but then said Johnny Cueto actually would have had the highest WAR of the runner-ups.
Makes sense, yeah.
But Vogelsong, again, memorable because of the championships and his right. ability to come up big in big games for them is very memorable. Because I would have picked Vogelsong over Cueto too, but if you look at their careers, Cueto's the better pitcher by far. So
yeah, for sure. And I think this is the exact same rotation that I sent you when the one from Stark came out and we said, oh, we should do one for the Giants. And yeah. I said, here's my rotation. And it's an exact rotation. You got to have Jason Schmidt in there.
Yep.
Webb is the guy. You know, in, I don't know, in 7 or 8 years, maybe it's a little bit different because, you know, maybe Birdsong and Harrison bump mm-hmm. out Schmidt. It's possible. But yeah, that's a really nasty starting five that the Giants have had in the past 25 years.
All right, I had one other question, and it is in the bullpen. He put together a bullpen. He did not just take the best closers and put them as the
yeah. bullpen.
So he's got Yusmeiro Petit as your bulk innings guy from the right side, Jeremy Affeldt, and Javier Lopez as your lefty combo to get out left-handed hitters, and in Affeldt's case, get right-handed hitters out too. George Contos as your middle reliever, Santiago Casilla as well as your middle reliever. Tyler Rogers as your setup guy. That was actually kind of cool to see. Because it's like the only, you know, him and Yastrzemski are really the only players on this list from the last like 5 or 6 years, I think.
Yeah, that's
true. Everyone else is an old school guy. Oh, Logan Webb as well in starting rotation. And then he had Sergio Romo as the setup guy. You could have put Santiago Casilla as a setup guy too. They both played that role. And then Brian Wilson as a closer. Now, here's the question. Brian Wilson over Rob Nen, who would have been your closer?
Probably Rob Nen. But again, Rob Nen was only, you know what? They honestly, when you look at it, they probably each had as many solid seasons as the other one did. So Brian Wilson probably had what, two really, really solid seasons. And Rob Nen for us, since it was early in the 2000s, only had two solid seasons for us. And then yeah, 2003, he was gone. So
the problem with Nen is arguably his best Giants closing season was in 1998. So it doesn't count.
True.
It's either, you know, it's 98 or it's 2000. They're both like really, really close. He struck out more, actually probably 2000, but 98, he was pretty lights out as well. His 2000 seasons are 2000, 2001, 2002. And as we know, he literally gave his arm, his shoulder to try and yes. win, to try and win the World Series. He never pitched again after tearing up his shoulder, trying to win a World Series. In those 3 years, 41 saves, 45 saves, and 43 saves. And then you measure Brian Wilson's three best years with the Giants is 2009, 2010, 2011. 38 saves, 48 saves, 36 saves. Their stats are actually very similar. They both struck out a lot of guys. I think the tail end of 2011 for Wilson, you could sense that he was, he was kind of falling off a little bit. The strikeouts weren't there as they were in the previous season. He was a strikeout machine in 2010. That's the biggest toss up. I don't think you can actually go wrong because you're looking at three seasons for both. If you want to use WAR, you're basically going with and pitching WAR and bullpen WAR is a little different. 6.5 for Nen, and then for Brian Wilson, it is 4.7. So just on like a war calculation, Nen gets it. But again, closer war is kind of a weird thing. Anyways, both of those guys were lights out.
I would probably, and again, if you could just add whoever you want, I think I'd take out Kontos. I like Kontos, but or Kaseya, really one of the two guys, take them out, put Nen in there. I would have Nen be my closer, and I'd have Brian Wilson be my setup guy. I keep Tyler Rogers because I love to watch him pitch. I know it drives people crazy, but it's one of my favorite things. When he comes in, I get very excited because it's a fun at bats against that guy. You know who I wouldn't put on the list 100%. Is Dustin Hermanson. That guy. He wouldn't be anywhere near this team.
What about Tim Worrell?
Yeah, he wouldn't be there either.
That guy. You know, Tyler Rogers is secretly the most fun pitcher to use in the show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I bet. I haven't used him a whole lot, but I bet. I think if I'm going to do a Road to the Show pitcher, I think I'll make a sloppy submarine. A submariner who throws a knuckleball. That'd be a lot of fun.
I can miss on his slider, and it's still a strike, and it's still swing every single time. It's awesome. All right, let's shut this thing down with our player of the week here.
All right, player of the week. We're going back to the well. I think this guy was our player of the week 2 weeks ago. We're going back to Elliot Ramos. He had a fantastic week. A lot of guys, you know, had some good weeks. Nobody's drove in more than three runs in this week, and that was Luis Matos, but he doesn't get player. He only had four at bats in the entire week. But I got to go with Elliot Ramos. He had 429 batting average clip. Could have also gone with Chapman. Could have gone one or the other. I was looking at Birdsong, but, you know, he did have the one loss. He got blown up in one of the games.
Yeah.
So I went with Ramos, 429 batting average, 228 WRC plus, 501 WOBA. It's pretty outstanding. And he had a home run, scored four runs, stole two bases, and drove in two runs. So he was kind of the only offensive catalyst, you know, other than the one Ramos swing, but pretty much the only offensive catalyst that we've been kind of keen on the last couple of weeks. And we're hoping tonight in about 1 minute here, you know, if you're listening to this, you know, when it's on the podcast apps, you know, this game is already over, but we're heading into a pretty big series and we're going to need some offense to kind of put the Padres out of their misery early in these ball games.
Yeah, you know, what's funny is the Padres actually, if you're just looking at runs scored, have a worse offense than the Giants. But if you look at their individual players, you kind of go, how?
Like, exactly.
Like, Tatis isn't like tearing the cover off of the baseball. He still has like 15 home runs. Like, Gavin Sheet is hitting. Machado's not hitting for power, but he's hitting for average. They still have Luis Arias. Like, they should be scoring a lot more runs than they are, but they also do not give up a lot of runs like the Giants. And then Atlanta, who did not have as good of a week as I thought. They are still under 500. They were 3-10, 3-7 in their last 10. And they also themselves do not score a whole lot of runs. So I was thinking that they were going to be coming into, you know, that they're going to come into San Francisco and just be kind of bonkers, but no, they're struggling still. So Giants, you know, they have to take advantage of being at home. They have to win these games at home. You have to be a good home team. They are 17-9 at home, so good home record. They're still just under 500 on the road. But you can't do the whole, like, 4-3 week here. Like, you got to put some – it's got to be like a 5-2, you know, at the minimum. You got to start creating some distance in at least in your home series, because if you know the roads is going to be, if you're a 500 team the rest of the way on the road, great, that's fantastic, but you do have to make up for it at home. So here's to them having a successful week, and we will be here next week to talk all about it. I was going to do an old guy alley that's more like an old lady alley, but I don't think Crystal would want me to call her old lady. Maybe we'll dump that for a time where we don't have as much things to talk about. It has to do with microplastics. I may have brought that up before on this show. I know I've talked to you about it. But yeah. But yeah, so we'll be back next week. So for Brad, I'm Double G. See you when we see you. Peace out.
Peace.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.